101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Brad Pepping. Today is Monday, February 22nd, 2010, and you're listening to News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The event has been organized in response to the media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced student and community newscast, offering listeners local, national, and international news from a fully independent perspective.
What's left of us, just a big mistake.
All right, everyone, thanks for joining me tonight. Today is the start of the second week of the Olympics, and Vancouverites are turning their attention to what comes next. Today on the show, we'll get an update from the Legal Observer program. We'll hear from our friends at the UBC, CITR News' partner publication, about what they're covering for the Games, and we'll also bring you highlights from this past weekend. That's all here on News 101 in the next hour. But first, I'm happy to have Greg McMullen on the line, a coordinator of BCCLA's Legal Observer program. Greg, thanks very much for joining me.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
To start things off, can you fill us in on how the program fared this past weekend? Have things been fairly low-key?
Things have been fairly low-key over this last weekend. We've had a lot of continuation of the same sorts of things that I talked about on Friday, where we've had observers overnight at the tent city. We had a couple of very peaceful demonstrations, and basically everything's going along pretty well.
Well, I guess in a way that's quite perfect, isn't it? Maybe you could follow up on something we talked about on Friday's show. Did the police take heed to David Eby and the BCCLA's call out to leave behind all their military grade weapon? Is that something that Vancouverites saw this weekend?
Actually, no, there were no heavy weapons on display. I think that's partly, or probably mostly, actually, because of the low-key nature of the protest events. We had the housing rally that went extremely smoothly with people marching from the camp out past the tent city and to the art gallery during some of the busiest traffic we've ever seen in the city. And a few other smaller demonstrations that really attracted little attention from the police.
So I guess the main difference that we are seeing for this weekend in comparison to last weekend is that this weekend there's been a very small amount of protest, or the protests that have happened have been very low-key, as you say, whereas last weekend they were really very engaging. And then comparatively, this past weekend saw a great amount of public drunkenness, as the Vancouver Police Department has been telling most media outlets. And so I guess in an effort to curb this public drunkenness, the Vancouver Police Department, the VPD, has actually been shutting down liquor stores. They've been shutting down 15 private liquor stores in the downtown and the West End both Saturday and Sunday night, while of course the public liquor stores would have been already closed at that point. I'm wondering if maybe you could comment on the Legal Observer program in connection to not just protesters, because obviously you're operating on a 24-hour basis, and so you will there will be Legal Observers, there will be people down in their orange t-shirts near Granville Street during all this public drunkenness. And so can you comment on ways in which the Observer have been interacting with that? Have they been documenting the ways that police have been interacting with partygoers? Have they interacted with tourists in that way?
Yes, they have. We've been getting reports of some searches by the police that might not necessarily... We haven't had observers actually spot this, but we've been hearing reports of sort of random stop and searches for alcohol. And that's obviously something that we're not too pleased about if it is occurring. We've got observers out in the field wandering through the live site areas and through some of the busier streets now. And if that is happening, we hope to document it and make sure that it doesn't continue.
Right. So I guess, would you have any comments or any advice for people who might be in engaging in that type of activity, you know, when they're going downtown? What are their civil liberties when it comes to partying during the Olympics? Are the police in bounds of what they have been doing, you know, except for these stops and searches?
If, for instance, you're walking down the street with a can of beer in your hand, you probably are putting aside some of your rights because you are breaking the law. But if you're just walking down the street with, say, a backpack, and the police ask to search you, you don't have to consent to that search. The search is allowed, but if you say, if you let them do it, basically. So if they ask to look in your bag and you open it up, then, of course, they can look inside it.
Right.
But otherwise, really, they're not supposed to without reasonable grounds to suspect.
Okay, I guess on a completely different note, I was hoping maybe we could jump back to the Tent City protest that you'd brought up earlier.
Sure.
It's been quite remarkable. It's been today. It's been 1 week in its operation. It's already gone through a whole like 7 day period, and they've had some incidences with undercover police who've been evicted from that area, who've been removed. There hasn't been a great deal of intimidation or anything in that way. Maybe you could speak on the ways in which the Tent City protest, I guess, could operate in the future. Do they have much chance for viability after the Olympics? Do you think that this is something that we could see as an institution in Vancouver, something that we can go down to quite a bit? Or, you know, do you think that once the games end, the police are going to roll in and shut it down?
I think the Tent City has actually been a surprise to me personally in that it's been allowed to operate for so long. It is against the law, and the people organizing it do realize that this is an act of civil disobedience, and the land does belong to Concord Pacific. At any point, there could be an order from Concord Pacific could go to court to seek an order to have them removed, or the police could just go in and remove them. It's likely not a viable institution in that location. But on public lands, might be another question after the decision from Victoria that says that, well, the government might not have an obligation to provide housing. They probably shouldn't get in the way of people who are trying to provide it for themselves.
Right. Maybe you could talk about the ways in which these organizers of the Tent City protest could, I guess, prepare themselves in case that thing does happen, in case their civil disobedience is called out by the police. Do they have any type of, is it going to be comparable to the Black Bloc members from last Saturday? Do you think that the police...
I couldn't even begin to comment on that.
Okay, for sure. And before we go, can you give us any last comments about what you expect for the Legal Observer program in the coming days before the end of the games?
We're going to continue around-the-clock coverage of the Tent City and hopefully keep observing things down there. We are doing more patrols of bigger areas, so we can be expected to be seen around transit hubs or down through the busy areas downtown around various Olympic venues. So we'll just be out there keeping an eye out for any violations and addressing other things as they come up.
Right. Well, thanks so much for speaking with me today. I really do appreciate it. And best of luck, as I said, in the coming days.
Great. Thanks for having me.
That was Greg McMillan of BCCLA's Legal Observer program with an update about what's going on in the city. Tune in on Friday's show to hear from Hassan Junaid about the final days of the program. We're going to take a quick break now, but when we come back, we'll have the fine folks from the UBC, UBC's campus newspaper, filling us in on the latest. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Don't touch that dial.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots, global, unembedded, international, independent news hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.
Tuesday, February 23rd, beginning at sunset in Montreal, broadcasting live on your local campus and community radio station.
Sometimes we get that instant homelessness. We didn't expect to be homeless, and we find ourselves on the street because of an eviction or a notice.
Canada's largest talk show on poverty and homelessness.
We have a mayor who compared poor people to pigeons publicly and said that if you stop feeding them, they'll go away.
The 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, broadcasting February 23rd to 24th. A 14-hour live radio show from frozen street corners across Canada. Call in live, join the discussion.
Our demand from the federal government is $2 billion a year for social housing units across Canada. That'll just help us to start catching up to the 15 years that we've lost in building social housing in this country. It's really a glaring example of the negligence of the government.
Visit www.ckut.ca for more info.
The Homelessness Marathon will be broadcasting live from Vancouver on Tuesday, February 23rd at 8 p.m. SCITR 101.9 FM partners with CJSF 90.1 FM and Co-op 102.7 FM to bring you an hour of interviews and stories of how the 2010 Olympics are affecting homelessness in Vancouver. Visit CITR.ca for more information.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood. Voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
Thanks very much for joining us. This is News 101 on CITR 101 FM in Vancouver. And right now, I'm pleased to present the reporters and editorial staff of the UBCR campus newspaper who are live with me in studio. Today, I have Paul Bucci, Trevor Record, and Justin McElroy. Thank you, boys, for joining me tonight. Can you tell me what's new with our student news publication? Justin, what's going on?
Certainly. Well, as we've mentioned, we're still publishing Olympics, and we have our website, ubc.ca, as well as our Twitter account, twitter.com/ubc, where we're publishing around the clock all the news that's happening both at campus and downtown, and covering many of the same things that you folks at CITR are doing today. But the stories that we have for this evening are: last Wednesday, the bus stop at University Boulevard and Allison Road, near University Village, was announced closed until March 1st. TransLink website said that this is due to passenger volumes and public safety concerns.
19 people were injured and 9 were sent to the hospital Tuesday night during a free Alexis on Fire concert. The Vancouver Sun reported that the rock band was only on stage for about 20 seconds before the crowd surged forward at Live City Yale Town. Barricades broke, resulting in injuries to spectators. Vancouver City Manager Penny Bellum told The Sun that the incident was unprecedented, as Live Nation, the concert promoters, have been using the same style of barricade for 20 years.
And in UBC News, the Douglas Mitchell Winter Sports Center has sold an unprecedented amount of food since the first few days of the Olympics. According to the UBC 2010 website, after only 5 hockey games at the arena, 11,000 hot dogs, 8,100 Coca-Cola beverages, 2,600 pints of beer, and 2,400 soft pretzels have been sold. The staff also served U.S. VP Joe Biden and his entourage during the China versus USA game.
Liquor stores were ordered to be closed at 7 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday after the Vancouver Police Department saw an extensive amount of public drunkenness in the streets on Friday. According to CTV, approximately 150,000 people were in downtown Vancouver Friday night, and approximately 40 arrests for intoxication-related incidents were reported. That doubles that of usual Friday nights. In a VPD press release, it said, "Vancouver police will continue to monitor the situation and, if need be, ask for further closures in the coming days."
11 days into his new job at the Richmond Olympic Oval, UBC PhD student Daryl Bannon was fired due to his affiliation with Dr. Chris Shaw, a UBC researcher and professor who has a lab at VGH, and he's also a well-known anti-Olympics activist. Based on the fact that Shaw was Bannon's supervisor at VGH, Bannon was labeled a security risk, questioned by members of the RCMP, and subsequently fired. For Justin McElroy, Trevor Reichard, I'm Paul Bucci.
Well, thank you guys very much for coming in. We really do appreciate that. We're going to take another quick break now, but when we come back in a matter of seconds, we'll be offering you stories that we covered this weekend, including a debate about the merits of respecting diversity of tactics, as well as Canada's need for a national housing program. That's all here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Make sure you don't go anywhere.
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate, you remember Pilate from the New Testament?
What does Pilate? He fiddled while...
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show on CITR.
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the helpline is one of many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The helpline number is 604-696-4666 or contact us online at www.aidsvancouver.org.
The 10th Anniversary Vancouver International Dance Festival is taking place March 12th to March 21st at the Vancouver Playhouse and Roundhouse venues. The 2010 lineup includes Vancouver Companies, Mascal Dance, Kokoro Dance, Flamenco Rosario, and Out Inner Space, Ontario's Toronto Dance Theatre, Taiwan's LAFA and Artists, Denmark's Kit Johnson, New Zealand's Black Grace and Bill Crutchmaster Shannon, Michael Sakamoto, and Evidence from the United States. The 10th Anniversary Vancouver International Dance Festival, March 12th to 21st at the Vancouver Playhouse and Roundhouse venues. Tickets are available at 604-662-4966 or online at vidf.ca.
Listen, radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
Welcome back. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. I'm Brad Pepink, and I thank you all very much for listening. We're going to go now to a story that we produced over the weekend, and as the boys from the UBC were saying, tourists and eager Vancouverites were being sequestered this past weekend by police as activities that they were engaging with on Granville Street were labeled as public drunkenness. However, activists in the city have been focusing their attention on homelessness. The Tent City protest, as we mentioned, is in full force and is attracting tourists now. While most visitors to the area and to the city systematically avoid Hastings Street, the past week hundreds have actually shown up with their cameras at the ready. The occupation of this vacant Vanock site is now home to many of Vancouver's most rejected. While most of the infrastructure of the site has been donated by community members, some of the tents in the village are glowing with political statements. Pivot Legal Society's Red Tent campaign has been hitting Vancouver's streets the past few days, and on Saturday they were the central figure at a rally at the Vancouver Art Gallery, calling for Canada to adopt a national housing program. Here's more on that.
Don't leave them in alleys, they need a home today. The mentally ill are often homeless. Can you get that through your head? They need help, not ignoring it, or else they would end up dead.
On a brilliantly warm Saturday, thousands gathered outside the Vancouver Art Gallery during the second weekend of the 2010 Winter Olympics. Overheard amongst the cheering and jeering of the crowd, a group of raging grannies championed the rights of Canada's homeless. A small group of protesters, activists, and community members pushed through the throngs of Olympic revelers to call on Canada to implement a national housing policy. Pivot Legal Society, alongside the Impact on Community Coalition and a variety of other community and social justice groups, gathered and shouted, faced with red tents and carrying signs, to identify the homelessness crisis in Vancouver. Here's what organizer Am Johal had to say about the gathering.
Today's action is aimed at the federal government. Federal government used to be involved in a social housing program from the early 70s to the early 90s. It was one of the best social housing programs in the world. When that was canceled, homelessness began to proliferate across the country. There's about 300,000 homeless people in Canada, between 10,500 and 15,000 homeless people in BC. And what we're really trying to do is to refocus that attention to bring back a social housing program. Canada's the only G8 country in the world without a social housing program. So today's message was very clear. It was directed at the federal government, and we wanted to draw those contrasts about when society decides to spend money on a two-week party like the Olympics, if we can refocus that agenda and fund social housing so that we can reduce those homelessness numbers and eventually eliminate homelessness.
The atmosphere was light and upbeat throughout the rally. Including a few songs from the Raging Grannies to start things off, Am Johal introduced a range of speakers. The crowd cheered on a First Nations elder from the downtown East Side, the executive director of Pivot Legal Society, and an MP from Vancouver East Side. But by the time Dustin Malaki took to the microphone, most of the few hundred gathered had already dispersed. A former Olympic athlete, Dustin read from prepared notes and commented that it's not a matter of homes or games, but that we can rectify the two. I caught up with Dustin to ask him about being involved in this demonstration as a former athlete.
Yeah, I was representing Canada in the speed skating long track.
Okay.
And, you know, it's... I say homes and games because I think if we just point the media in the right places, we'll see where we're lacking, and I think there's room across the board for funding for everything. So it's just a matter of awareness and getting the right media attention.
We also had the chance to chat with some tourists who coincidentally happened to be at the art gallery that Saturday. Here's what one tourist had to say about visiting Vancouver and the homelessness issue here.
You know, like I'm for public housing or some kind of housing for people that are on the street. I think the issue would be is to get the government involved with programs that are going to save the real stress cases that are causing the hospitals money if they're always in the hospital because they're living on the street because they have disease, they have, you know, alcoholism that causes them to get into the hospital, which drains our medical system with people that could be saved. So money could be spent on, you know, buying apartments for the real high cases. And if you did the math, you would find that paying for an apartment would be far cheaper than them in the hospital all the time, and us taxpayers paying for that medical treatment over a course of period of time.
Lastly, here's what Libby Davies had to say about the housing issue in Canada.
In the midst of the glass towers, in the midst of the $6 or $8 billion Olympics, in the midst of all the lineups, the mascots, the medals, in the midst of our city, and we are here to speak a truth. And the truth is that housing is a human right and must be addressed. And that's why we're here today. We come from many different backgrounds and perspectives. First Nations, the grandmas, the power of women, social activists, the amazing organizations like Impact on Communities Coalition and CAP and Pivot and DERA. And thank you to the legal observers who are here as well. You're really, you guys are terrific. Workers, we're here with people who are homeless, who are on the street, people who have come from the tent city down at 58 West Hastings, which has become a symbol of the gentrification and the struggle that's taking place in this city, and it's very real and it's playing out every single day. We're also here as elected representatives, and I want you to welcome some of my colleagues who are here today. Ellen Woodsworth, city councillor, who just came off the hunger strike relay that Am has organized for more than a year now. And Shane Simpson, who is the MLA for Vancouver Hastings and the housing and homeless critic for the provincial NDP. And David Cadman, also a city councillor. Thank you for being here today. And it's really good to see people out. And, you know, we're kind of surrounded by lineups. You know, there are people that are waiting to get into this and into that. And we want to say to the visitors who are in our city, please notice what is going on in the reality. Look at this banner that has been put together by the Citywide Housing Coalition that is the most incredible graphic of what has actually happened in terms of the increase in homelessness, which has tripled since the Olympic bid was put in. And the very small line of what social housing has actually been built. So we say to the visitors who have come here, who are, you know, participating in the Olympics and in the lineups and going to the games, please take note of what is happening in this city. And if you feel concerned about what you are seeing and what you're experiencing, then send an email to the federal government, the provincial government, and the city, and speak out and be one with us in solidarity to say that homelessness should not exist in a wealthy country like Canada. You know, this campaign is about political choices that are being made. It's not like we don't have the money to deal with this issue, right? We see the billions and billions of dollars that's been spent on the war in Afghanistan. And, you know, ironically, we hear about the Olympic trust that's meant to end conflict globally, and yet Canada is still involved in that conflict in Afghanistan. We see the money that is spent on the Olympics. And what we are here to say today is that we want to see the social priority, the economic priority of poverty and homelessness and housing addressed not only in our own city but right across the country. And we're here to demand of all levels of government, but particularly the Harper Conservative government, who have so abysmally failed to recognize this issue. And while they're spending billions on infrastructure in the Olympics and other projects, we're here to say that we demand that there be a national housing program. And when we had such a program, people were not homeless on the street. They were not destitute. They didn't have to rely on shelters that were forever worried about not having the funds that they'd be closing down. And that's what's going to happen again as we get towards April, that there'll be another crisis and another battle to even keep the shelters, the emergency shelters, open. And so we want to say to the Conservative government that the provision of safe, affordable, appropriate housing for all people is a right in this country, as was noted by the UN rapporteur. And you can see his quote right on the red tent for all to see. The quote that he made in his report to the Canadian government. Now, sometimes, you know, when we have rallies and we speak out and people say, well, what else we can do? Well, there's lots of things we can do. First of all, we have to continue with the social activism. And I want to say to the folks who were out last night in the red tents at Science World in solidarity, and to the folks at the Tent City and the community that is growing there, we support you, we are with you, and we will be with you as long as that continues. to the broader community is really important, the social action. But we also have to work on the political level, and I do believe that. And I know there are some people who maybe don't believe that, and that's okay. I'm fine with that. But we do have a bill in Ottawa, Bill C-304, that calls for a national housing strategy and program. And it's already passed second reading, and it's already been at the committee. And even though Harper shut down Parliament and is trying to keep us out of there, when we go back, that bill will still be there. And I want to tell you, we are going to fight tooth and nail to get that bill through. We're not going to let it go. And we're going to say to Harper and all of his backbenchers and his cabinet ministers that there has to be a national program. I can remember the days when we had a national program, when wonderful housing was built in this city and you didn't see people on the street. And we have to make it clear that it's not an accident what's going on here. It's not people's fault and it's not an accident. This was about political decisions that were made to abandon these very important social programs, whether it was keeping the welfare rates low, whether it was cutting out the housing programs, whether it was allowing the developers to run amok in places like the downtown east side. These are conscious, deliberate decisions. And so we want to hold all levels of government to account. But most of all, I want to focus on the federal government, because I do think that our city council has done a lot to try and deal with this issue. And I'm sure they can do more. In some ways, they bear the brunt of what's going on because they're at the end of the line. And even the provincial government has taken some measures, you know, but even the provincial government has not gone far enough. Saving existing units is one strategy, but it's not building the new units that we need. But most of all, we got to go off to the federal government and to say without that involvement with the provinces, the territories, the municipalities, the First Nations, we're not going to have the housing program that we have to have, and we will continue to see a social and economic disaster in our city. We will continue to see the divide grow bigger and wider as more and more people fall into poverty and the poverty gets deeper and deeper. That's not what we want to see in this country. So thank you for being here today, and I want to end by saying this. You know, we are going back into that Parliament on March the 3rd, and that the housing bill that we have, Bill C-304, will be coming up fairly quickly. And I want to make sure that every single member of Parliament in British Columbia is supporting that bill. The Liberals have been supporting it. The Bloc have been supporting it. Of course, the New Democrats have been supporting it. So if you know of a Conservative member of Parliament, find out, demand to know why they have not been supporting this basic bill that needs to go through, because there is an opportunity here to bring a message, a unity, a voice, to speak on the streets, to rally, to organize, to support the grassroots actions, but also to work on the legislative front as well and make it all come together and to make it mean something so that we can say housing is a human right, it's been realized, and that this is about caring and compassion and building a society that believes in those rights and acts on those rights. Thank you very much.
That was federal MP for the NDP party, Libby Davies, speaking Saturday at a rally in front of the Vancouver Art Gallery about Canada's need to implement a national housing program. We're going to take another quick break, but when we come back, we'll be jumping into the debate of respecting diversity of tactics. This is News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Yeah, all we need is some funky dev term.
Feeling funky.
1, 2, party people in the place to be.
Funky dope. Funky dope.
1, 2, party people in the place
Rainbow
to be.
Rainbow Groove here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Every Friday night from 9 to 10:30 p.m. Getting you in the mood for the weekend. I'm your host, DJ B-Fad, and I'll present a kaleidoscope of funky grooves for your mind, body, and soul. Tune in to hear everything from underground disco, roller boogie, space funk, rare groove, jazzy house, dub reggae, and anything and everything from Chaka Khan to The Clash. That's Rainbow Groove every Friday night from 9 to 10:30 p.m. here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Crazy fresh, crazy fresh.
Yeah, all we need is some funky dev chow.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to...
fun.
While
fun
cloaks itself in a plethora of disguises, its favorite mantle still remains
fun. Fun
devours all it touches, its voracious appetite rarely fulfilled. Yet
fun
doesn't only destroy, it creates and molds as well. Let's examine closely then this dangerously evil creation, this new breed. But a word of caution, handle it with care, and don't drop your guard. This rapacious new breed prowls both alone and in packs, operating at any level, any time, anywhere, and with anybody. Who are they?
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
CITR News is committed to providing you with in-depth Olympic coverage from an alternative perspective. As part of this coverage, we are launching a new Eyes on the Street feature, where Vancouverites will have a chance to tell their Olympic story. We want to hear your perspective on life in Vancouver during the Games. That's why we're inviting you to be CITR's Eyes on the Street this February. If you're at an event, a protest, a celebration, or even simply on the bus, tell us about it. There are three ways to file a report. Call our Eyes on the Street hotline at 604-822-5334. Email news at citr.ca or tweet CITR News. Then sit back and wait for your report to be featured on the next edition of News 101, which airs Monday and Friday at 5 p.m. right here on CITR, 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Hey everyone, welcome back and thanks for joining me. This is Brad Pepping, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thanks very much for listening. I have a new piece right for you, right here for you now, about diversity of tactics. It was an event that was held at the W2 Media and Culture House on Saturday, and here's a report about everything that's gone on. What is violence and what is a nonviolent attack on an inanimate object? Saturday at the W2 Media and Culture House on Hastings Street, Rabble.ca and Working TV co-hosted a community forum and live broadcast entitled Diversity of Tactics and Citizen Protest. The event was organized in response to the media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets. In sometimes lively debate between Stop War activist Derek O'Keefe and Known As Legal activist Harsha Walia, panelists discussed the merits of respecting diversity of tactics. The event saw personal attacks from and heated confrontations with members of the community. Derek O'Keefe started things off with a discussion of the importance of civil disobedience. He argued that breaking the law only effectively furthers a group's message when it demonstrates the intentions of a group. To sum up his points, Derek raised concern over respect of diversity of tactics. He expressed dismay that demonstrating criticism of diversity of tactics was met with a black and white, you're either with us or against us mentality. Conversely, Harsha Walia established the black bloc technique on a spectrum of tactics. In her opening statements, she set the tone of the debate by actively stirring the crowd by declaring a rejection of esoteric generalizations about diversity of tactics. Harsha wanted to talk specifically about the black bloc technique.
Whether the black bloc tactic is effective, and I think a lot of the debate seems to focus around this idea of effectiveness. I hope my earlier points kind of build on this point, which is the black bloc tactic cannot be judged in and of itself, right? Like any other mass movement, as Derek mentioned, you know, we have to gauge them as a long-term campaign. So if we're going to talk about the black bloc tactic, we have to talk about the black bloc tactic as part of the anti-Olympics convergence, as part of the anti-Olympic movement. And in my opinion, you can't separate those things. And as far as I know, the anti-Olympic movement as a whole, including all of its parts, has been very successful. In terms of the black bloc tactic in and of itself, if we are to separate it out, idea that the black bloc movement marginalizes mass movements. And I think that happens in several ways. The first is that there is no monopoly on the mass movement. There are a lot of people who don't engage in what is kind of the monoculture of the mass movement in symbolic protest, who find direct action to be very empowering. And from that perspective, the black bloc is but as part of a larger movement, it's certainly effective. I would also argue two other points, which is that Black Bloc tactics actually help open up space for more mainstream tactics to have to take place. And that's something that I cannot emphasize enough. I would argue that the success of the Memorial March and the success of the Tent City, at least in part, was due to Saturday, Feb 13th. And the reason for that is severalfold. One is that law enforcement, because they create a good protester, bad protester divide, have been largely absent from the Tent City. Because they know and they want to play up the idea that Feb 13th is the bad protesters and we're going to let these other spaces go. And so I can, without a doubt, say one of the successes of the Tent Village has been the fact that Saturday, Feb 13th opened up a space for that to happen. The idea that we've lost credibility in mainstream media, part of, you know, for what that's worth, not that we ever had any to begin with, but for what it's worth, the mainstream media plays into good protester, bad protester. And again, part of the reason the Tent Village has gone positive mainstream media is their own spin, not our spin, but their own spin, that this is a peaceful Tent Village that should be defended and should be supported. So I would argue that Black Bloc tactics absolutely do help build a broader movement and absolutely do help build a space for various other tactics to take place, and they don't exist in isolation of them. A point on the mass movement, and this is kind of an obvious one, beyond that, I don't think building a mass movement is always the gauge of the success of a tactic. If that was the case, Indigenous blockades would not be happening because we'd have to wait for every single Canadian to denounce Canadian patriotism and Canadian nationalism. Dread is because there is a need, it's because people are fighting back, and we're not waiting for millions of people to stand beside us for the revolution to happen.
With Derek after the forum, and he told us why it was important for Vancouver's activist community to have this debate.
people in the activist community, broadly speaking, have been debating this and discussing it. So some people I used to work with who do rabble.ca, independent media, thought that this would be like, since the debate was already happening, we should be talking about it in a public forum. So they put this on today. And what specifically we were supposed to be debating, the idea of respect for diversity of tactics, which I think is a phrase that sounds really good, but has sometimes been sort of, in its application, has been used to stifle debate about different tactics that activists choose to use, both before and after. And also, you know, that was the main thing. So in a way, the fact that we had the debate, I think, was a big victory and just really healthy for a movement that is, and a group of people who are obviously strongly debating these things amongst themselves, to talk publicly and just to kind of clarify where we agree and where we disagree. Because obviously people choose different tactics sometimes because they have different goals, but a lot of other times we think different tactics are the best way to achieve the same goal. So it's good to have a conversation about all this, especially given the way that the window breaking and different forms of vandalism that happened, or property destruction that happened on Saturday, especially the way that was framed in the corporate media. And you know, things we do as an activist community always are given a different spin by the corporate media. So today was a chance to sort of, using the independent media, have this debate.
Very good. And so, into the future, would you like to see these types of debates happening more often?
Yeah, in retrospect, it might have been good to do this a week or two from now, once the heads had cooled a little bit. And yeah, so I would like to see this sort of thing discussed in the future.
Derek and Harsha were intellectually disagreeing on the perceptions of February 13th as a day of action. This past weekend, we caught up with some non-activists in Vancouver who were simply taking in the Olympic atmosphere. I spoke with one longtime Vancouverite who's concerned about last week's protest. This is what he had to say about it.
I think it was a very real chance and opportunity for those people to make a statement. I was disappointed. I would have been disappointed if it had carried on. It's not unexpected, I don't think, to see that at Granville and Georgia, the key intersection that gets the maximum exposure. Again, I'm glad that people weren't hurt and it didn't carry beyond where it was.
Lastly, I want to leave you with the closing remarks of a Vancouver establishment, an elder of the downtown east side. Speaking at a housing rally later on Saturday, she expressed sadness over the interpretation of the Black Bloc's intentions. Here's what she had to say.
And you know, our young people that have broke the windows at these big stores with the Olympic costumes or whatever you call it, whatever you want to name it, they're not bad. They're not bad. They're angry because of the rich people bringing the Olympics into our country when it wasn't needed. When it wasn't needed here. Those kids were not bad. They were only angry because of what they bring to our country, big time poverty. And I'm angry. I'm very angry at these people that organized the Olympics to come to Canada. Our beautiful country, our stolen land, our stolen native land. They had to bring the Olympics here, and we're still fighting for our land. And we're going to continue to fight until we get some answers. So remember, those kids that broke the windows that were protesting, they're not bad. They're our people. They're our children. We are the mothers. We are the grandmothers. We are the aunts. We are the sisters. We are the caregivers. Those kids were not bad when they broke that window. They were protesting because of what's happening to our country and our city.
We're going to take another quick break now. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
The Vancouver 2010 Cultural Olympiad, presented by Bell, proudly presents Kanon and Tinner Owen, Thursday, February 25th at the Orpheum. An unforgettable night with hip-hop truth-teller and change-maker Kanon and North African sensation Tinner Owen. February 25th, all ages. Tickets at 1-800-TICKETS and tickets.com. For more info, visit vancouver2010.com/cultural olympiad.
My vegetables, I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
Sprouts. It's your 75-cent coffee fix in the sub. It's your source for reasonably priced, creatively named stew and vegan brownies.
It's your purveyor of bicycle-delivered local produce.
It's also a place where volunteers can realize their vision of responsible business and where like-minded students can explore UBC's food systems.
Hark! Sprouts is currently accepting applications for next year's executive board and is encouraging ambitious, creative, and disciplined students from all faculties and year levels to apply.
Come by Sprouts in the sub-basement to learn more about our projects and how to get involved.
I tried to kick the ball, but my tinny flew right out. I'm red as a bee, 'cause I'm so embarrassed.
SpongeBob, you're wasting me precious carbon dioxide.
I'm pumping it into the atmosphere, boy.
Thanks to global warming, the temperature will soon go through the roof, and then we'll have an endless summer.
Why do you want an endless summer, Mr. Krabs?
So I can open my latest money-making venture, the Krusty Pool.
The endless summer does sound fun.
And profitable.
Fun and profitable. Big business does it again.
Unfortunately, for those of us who aren't talking sponges, climate change isn't quite as fun. Luckily, there are many easy ways for students to conserve energy.
If chargers for cell phones, cameras, and laptops are left plugged in, they continue to draw electricity even when not connected to the device. This phantom load can be avoided by unplugging electronics and chargers after use. A more convenient option is to hook electronics up to a power bar, which can be switched off after use.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
The AMS Speakeasy provides information, peer counseling, and crisis support to the UBC community. Speakeasy volunteers are carefully chosen and trained to assist students in dealing with a wide range of issues, including relationship breakups, substance abuse, sexuality, and exam stress. To access our service for information or counseling, drop in to visit our desk on the north side of the sub-concourse. All drop-ins and call-ins are strictly confidential. We also have an online email referral service. If we can't help you, we can refer you to someone who can.
This is News 101. Thanks for being with me tonight. Before we go, I want to fill you in on a very special event that's actually occurring tomorrow across the country. February 23rd is the day for national campus and community radio stations to offer the time and space for Canada's homeless to have their voices heard. The 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon kicks off at 2 p.m. here in Vancouver on CITR, broadcasting a live stream from CKUT in Montreal. While various cities across the country will be offering content, here in Vancouver we'll be offering the voices from Vancouver's homeless musicians. Produced by CJSF, SFU's campus and community radio station, the event in Vancouver will be hosted from 8 to 10 p.m. at the W2 Media and Culture House on West Hastings Street. So if you're interested, please listen to CITR all day tomorrow. You can catch us online, or you can catch us on the FM dial 101.9 FM. Or if you're interested, you can even head down to the W2 Media and Culture Center and you can help out in any way that they need just for this great event to be happening. Again, This is News 101, and I'm Brad Pepink. Thanks so much for listening. You can catch us on Friday for another edition of the show. But before then, make sure that you catch some of our mini spots that are being aired here on CITR at 9 a.m. and 7 p.m., as well as rebroadcast on our partner stations across the province and the country. Again, for News 101, this is Brad Pepink. Thanks so much, everyone, and I hope you have a great day.